Welcome back to the Compass Podcast. Today on the show, we're joined by Jaron Mellerud, a research analyst at Arcane Research, focused on Bitcoin mining. We talk about Arcane's newest research report, how Bitcoin mining can transform the energy industry. Jaron, welcome to the Compass Podcast. Thank you so much for joining. I've been really enjoying the work that you've done this summer. Just like exploded onto the Bitcoin mining scene, honestly, just some of the graphics that you put up for Arcane Research, some of your personal interest in the space. And I think you've had a really good eye in zeroing in on what topics people are interested in, and that'd be the intersection of energy and Bitcoin mining. Today, we're going to talk about this new research report that Arcane Research and yourself just put out. And the topic itself is mostly focusing on Bitcoin mining's place in the energy industry and how Bitcoin mining can optimize the energy industry. So again, thank you for joining the podcast. Let's get a quick little bio from you before we jump into the conversation. There's lots to talk about today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Will. I'm really happy to be on this podcast. I've been listening to the Compass podcast for 2 years now, and it's taught me so much about Bitcoin mining. So I first became obsessed with Bitcoin after I saw how much money the central banks were printing after the lockdowns in 2020. And I remember seeing this chart of the extreme increase in the money supply, and I was just orange-pilled immediately. And I just decided to spend the following summer, the summer of 2020, to just study Bitcoin full time. And during this time, I was studying energy management in university, and I had to write my master thesis. And I figured I'd become so much liked to study Bitcoin mining. So I figured, okay, maybe I can write my master thesis on Bitcoin. And I thought that, okay, Bitcoin mining consumes a lot of energy. I study energy management. Okay, let's combine these two topics. And I wrote my master thesis on Bitcoin mining as a demand response and using ERCOT as a case study. And I became not only obsessed with Bitcoin, but I became more and more obsessed with Bitcoin mining. And Arcane Research offered me a full-time job as a research analyst, a crypto research analyst. But I mostly focus on Bitcoin mining. And I really love working as a research analyst on Bitcoin mining, and I try to spend as much time as I can on that. Yeah, so that's what I do. And given my energy background, I try to focus on Bitcoin mining and the energy markets. And I really believe that Bitcoin mining is a unique energy consumer, and it can solve several energy problems. Most people, they disregard Bitcoin mining as just yet another energy-intensive industry. But if you look deeper into how Bitcoin mining consumes energy, you will see that it's a very unique energy consumer that can actually be used as an energy tool to solve some of the energy industry's biggest problems.
Nice. Gave me a perfect segue there. And I just want to say that we're going to definitely pump your bags here on the show, because the stuff you've been putting out has just been excellent. I don't think a lot of people are doing it. Let's dive into the report entitled How Bitcoin Mining Can Transform the Energy Industry. You can find it on Arcane Research. Just go to the website. We'll also be running a little summary version in Mining Memo, so check that out. Thank you, Jaron, for writing that. Let's start with the first line conversation, talking about how Bitcoin mining fits into the energy industry. And the things that jumped out to me at the report was really the beginning of some of the five beneficial features of Bitcoin mining. The ones you listed were price responsiveness, interruptibility, location agnostic, modularity, and it's portable. So we can go through those in order or however you want to tackle them. I like how you break down those features of Bitcoin mining. They're all true. And I think that as someone's learning about Bitcoin mining, they'll find that those things are true in different ways, right? There's different ways to add load to the grid by adding S9s or adding S19s or some sort of efficiency there. The fact that you can pick these things up, either the miner or even the whole container, that's pretty impressive. But let's just jump into it and talk about those five things, and then we'll continue to move through the conversation.
Yeah. So first is Bitcoin mining is a price responsive load, meaning that it is financially incentivized to respond to changes in the electricity price. And that's because energy is about 80% of operating cost of Bitcoin mining, according to Cambridge University on average. So Bitcoin miners are constantly paying attention to their electricity prices. And if the electricity price reaches levels above the marginal cost of or the income per megawatt hour, the Bitcoin miner is financially incentivized to turn off its machines. And a Bitcoin miner always knows it's this cost of shutting down production, while other industries, they don't know it. For example, a cement producer, they don't know their alternative cost of not producing cement, because it's a lot of different processes involved in cement production. While in Bitcoin mining, you only do one thing, solving the SHA-256 algorithm, and you know exactly how much money you lose by not mining Bitcoin for 1 hour. So Bitcoin miners are very price responsive. And the second is interruptibility. It's about if Bitcoin miners actually can reduce their energy consumption and how fast they can do it. And as most listeners of this show knows, Bitcoin miners, like turning off a Bitcoin mining machine takes a few seconds, click of a button, and you're able to turn off this machine. So, and this interruptibility becomes very clear when comparing a Bitcoin miner to a data center, like for example, Facebook's data center. It is not an interruptible load, while a Bitcoin miner is an interruptible load. And the combination of price responsivity and interruptibility means that Bitcoin miners are very good, demand response resources, which we can talk about a little bit later. You also have location agnosticism. To mine Bitcoin, you only need energy, cheap energy, and an internet connection, which practically means that you can mine Bitcoin almost anywhere in the world. You can mine Bitcoin in really remote areas. And this factor means that Bitcoin miners are excellent consumers of stranded energy resources. You can't just place a cement factory or another energy intensive industry into in the middle of the desert in Texas, but you can place Bitcoin mining facilities there to take off this excess energy. In addition, a Bitcoin mining operation is modular. A Bitcoin mining machine consumes a specific amount of electricity, which means that to scale this operation into exactly the amount of load you need, you only need to increase or reduce the number of machines you use. So if you have, for example, 5 megawatts of available energy, okay, then you can buy 1,500 Antminer S19s. Okay, let's say you have 10 megawatts. Okay, then just scale it up to 3,000 Bitcoin mining machines. So you can always match your available energy with an exact Bitcoin mining load. And that is very, very unique. You also have portability. Bitcoin miners are portable operations. At least they can be designed to maximize portability. You can build a Bitcoin mining operation into a containerized solution, which is very easy to ship around. And you can set up this facility very easily. It's a plug and play solution. So in a lot of places, you don't know how long the energy will be in excess. For example, in northern Norway, where I'm from, energy here is very cheap because it's currently stranded. But with the high energy prices further south in Europe, the energy companies are looking at increasing the transmission capacity between northern Norway and the rest of Europe, which might in time increase the energy prices in northern Norway. But if you are worried about that as a Bitcoin miner, you can just maximize the portability of your operation by building it in containers, and you can ship your operation to another place with stranded energy if the transmission capacity increases here. So you have these five properties: price responsive, interruptible, location agnostic, modular, and portable. And it's actually really rare that other energy industries even have one of them, but Bitcoin mining has five of them. And that's really unique. And it means that Bitcoin mining loads can be utilized to solve several energy problems. For example, stabilizing the grid, consuming excess renewable energy, stranded energy. They can also consume stranded natural gas to mitigate natural gas flaring. And also you can reuse the heat from Bitcoin mining operations. So you have all these things you can do. There's also, we wrote about this energy problems in our report, but there are also many more energy problems that Bitcoin mining can help solve. But we chose to focus on these four problems.
Totally. And I think every single one of these, right, has a depth to it that's also interesting in and of itself. The one that really speaks to me is the reaction time, the fact that you can just turn off your machine immediately just by unplugging and give that energy back to the grid. And if you think about it, it's interesting because a lot of these other processes are energy intensive. They build on top of each other, right? So if Facebook unplugs, well, a lot of things that were building up in order for them to do the compute are now offline and they have to go back from square one. For a concrete mixer, a concrete manufacturer, a steel mill, same thing. Turn one thing off, turn off the whole site. You have to boot up in stages to get the whole thing online again. Bitcoin mining is just one operation, SHA-256, finding the nouns, and it's not dependent on the prior nouns, right? It's not dependent on the prior compute. Right? It's just every single time it needs to do a compute, it starts over from square one and starts looking for the next nouns. So I think you did a great job in this report looking through these five features, and every single one, like you said, has a depth to it. Let's talk about the non-flexible load portion of this, because the report does an excellent job of going through it and showing like where there's non-flexible loads, where there's non-flexible energy sources, I should say, why we need some sort of load that can contribute to the grid that is easy to turn off and on or portable. It can take up these energy sources. The report goes a lot into the fact that like solar and wind, a lot of times we have those energy sources in places where there's no transmission lines or there's no users of that energy and we don't have battery technology there. But Bitcoin mining can sit in place of those and consume that energy. And then later on the conversation, let's definitely address the economics of it, because I think this is where a lot of people get tripped up. They think, oh, well, if we build these things, then humans should be using them for human purposes. But Bitcoin mining enables, well, what you found in the report is that Bitcoin mining enables everyone to have better grids and more stable grids, and that there's better economics because of Bitcoin mining. But we'll start with the first part about non-flexible loads versus flexible loads and how the energy grid is built.
Okay, so historically, the focus and or the main goal of building energy systems or electricity systems has been to maximize the energy security and the available energy. So you focused on building out a very, very reliable supply side of energy, which consisted of fossil fuels and nuclear power. But now we see a shift where policymakers focus more on the cleanliness of the energy. So we see a massive shift from controllable energy sources, fossil fuels, which we control their output by just putting in more fuel when we need the energy, so we can actually control the supply side, to non-controllable energy sources like wind and solar, which depend on the weather, and we can't control the weather, so we really don't know when they will produce and when they will not produce. Electricity systems need system flexibility which is the ability of the system to match the supply and the demand. And since before, historically, most of the system flexibility was provided by the demand side, no, by the supply side. But as the supply side's flexibility decreases, as we integrate more wind and solar, we increasingly need to use the demand side for providing this system flexibility. And the best source of system flexibility, of demand side flexibility, is Bitcoin mining. Bitcoin mining is the best demand response resource that exists, simply because it's an interruptible process and the Bitcoin miners are price responsive. They're financially incentivized to respond to high energy prices, which happens during energy scarcity. So it's exactly because we are building so much wind and solar that we actually need more demand response capacity, and then Bitcoin mining is the best alternative. So another problem which when the increasing share of wind and solar comes with is energy waste. So you have both this system stability challenge, which Bitcoin mining can help solve, and you have the energy waste challenge, which also Bitcoin miners can help solve. Because there are no other energy consumers which are so flexible with regards to when and where they consume electricity. So Bitcoin miners can go out to stranded renewable energy in, for example, West Texas, and consume the excess energy, so these projects don't need to curtail their production, which they have to if they don't can sell to a Bitcoin miner. You also have the system stability issues, which are more local problems, which Bitcoin miners can help solve. And we see this happening in Texas now, and it's working really well so far.
Yeah, this summer has proven that as well, right? We saw a lot more Bitcoin miners hooked up to the grid, hooked up to the demand response, and took advantage of that. Let's talk about the Paris Accords really quickly. It's interesting to see something like the Paris Accords, which I think a lot of Bitcoin miners would probably not agree with in the first place. They wouldn't sign off on it in the first place, but they're there, right? A lot of nations have agreed to these things, and this is sort of the architecture for most energy policies going forward for countries. Bitcoin miners actually fit really well into this policy framework because we need a large demand response to the grid. I think the research you did pointed to 500 gigawatts needed of demand response. Was it by 2030 or 2040?
The International Energy Agency estimates that to reach the Paris Agreement, we need to increase the demand response capacity from 50 gigawatts currently to 500 gigawatts in 2030, which for me seems completely impossible, just like all the other of these climate goals they always make. But Bitcoin miners are the best alternative for demand response. So if policymakers really are serious about this Paris Agreement, they should integrate more Bitcoin mining into energy grids.
Yeah, let's walk through the logic of it. So like they want to add more wind and solar to the grid. We have this nice chart that's like up and to the right, 42% increase in sustainable development by 2040, I think is the chart. We need to add all that wind and solar, but it's a non-flexible energy source. How does Bitcoin mining fit into that picture?
Yeah, so Bitcoin mining, I believe that we also need, I believe that such a large share of wind and solar is impossible without creating big problems for the grids. And I don't think Bitcoin mining is a quick fix pill for it, but it can at least help. So Bitcoin miners, what they are basically doing in energy grids is that they are increasing the base load of the energy grid, but they're not increasing the peak load. And the peak load is what is expensive to supply. And it's also the energy which is usually running on these peaker plants, which are emitting the most greenhouse gases also. So Bitcoin miners are not increasing the peak load, they're simply increasing the base load. And this base load increase, it incentivizes more generation on the grid, which can lower energy prices for other consumers, and also makes the grids more secure, because now you have more capacity that you can turn on in case of a scarcity event. Like Bitcoin miners are not replacing the need for fossil fuels, as some people like to say. We will still need these peaker plants. We will still need a base load of fossil fuels, I think. I like to look at it in the practical way, and I know that Bitcoin mining is helping the economics of wind and solar plants. So why not combine Bitcoin mining with these wind and solar plants? It's good for the economics of the developers of these plants. Also, I believe that we have seen a lot of the development of wind and solar in the US the last few years has been due to production tax credits by the government, the federal government. So we might have seen actually too much development of wind and solar in for example, West Texas. But Bitcoin miners are sort of coming there to fix these central planning problems that are caused by central planners. And I think that's a very good thing for everyone.
Yeah, it's funny how Bitcoin's cleaning up like this fiat mistake of, let's talk about the levelized cost of energy. The economics of this is really fascinating. I think this is the unintuitive part, right? So a lot of times we have these natural resources we're building out. We're trying to claim wind or solar, trying to make it into energy. It costs money to develop those things. But oftentimes once it's built, it doesn't cost anything to produce it, right? The marginal cost for them is zero. And then you send out into the grid. You don't care how much people buy it for. You can bid down the market. And in some places, we even see the cost for that energy during times being negative because of the credits and whatnot. That can hurt other markets that are also sending energy into the market, saying like, we want to spend this amount per megawatt hour when we're selling into the grid. But they're competing against solar and wind, which have a 0% cost of producing this energy after a certain point. How does Bitcoin mining fit into this market disruption between these two sources of energy? How does Bitcoin mining perhaps fix the incentives for both parties and enable the grid to sell energy in a correct fashion?
So in grids that are mostly or have a very high share of wind and solar, you will see very volatile prices with periods of extremely low prices and when the wind and solar is producing, and periods of extremely high prices when the wind and solar is not producing, because then you will have energy scarcity because you don't have enough controllable generation to back up the system. And if Bitcoin miners come into these areas, they increase the electricity demand in the area, which can give higher prices for these wind and solar projects. They wouldn't need to curtail that much energy. But it also incentivizes development of more reliable baseload plants in the area, which is 100% needed to have energy security in the area.
Awesome. Yeah, I love the part about volatility because we've seen that in Texas, right? And I think sometimes we look at these economic thoughts, we're like, this is all textbook conversation, but it's happening in Texas, right? Where we have really cheap energy during some parts of the day because the wind's blowing and the sun is shining. But other parts, it's not so cheap, right? The example that you have in the research and probably most people think about is that winter storm in Texas in February of 2021, where the price of energy spiked. I think it said in the report is like $9,000 per megawatt hour. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the number that I remember from the top of my head. And that's a huge increase, huge percent increase on the cost of energy. And it's because when we add these energy sources to the grid, they are very, very volatile. So Bitcoin mining sort of fits in there and fixes these things. want to ask sort of a question from a different perspective. One thing you brought up in the report is, okay, if we have these energy sources that are stranded, they're far out in Texas or far out somewhere else where the population center is not, how do we get this energy sources to the people who need it? Or how do we capture these energy sources in a productive fashion? The few things that you noted were batteries, transmission line construction, or moving population centers or the energy center closer to the people who need it. Obviously, the third one's really tough to do. Not going to pick up Houston and move it deeper into Texas. And you need transmission lines to get the energy sources closer. That's very expensive. And the last one, battery technology, we're not quite there yet. There's some work on that front, but we're probably, you know, 10 to 50 years away from figuring that out. How does Bitcoin mining fit into that? And what do you say to the critique that, why are we investing in Bitcoin mining? We should be investing in battery technology and transmission lines. And we're missing out every day we don't do that.
Yeah. So in West Texas, like the only, and in other areas with a lot of stranded renewable energy, the only way to get this energy to the population centers is to transport it through transmission lines. So you need to increase the transmission line capacity. And that's generally very expensive and it takes a lot of time to build these transmission lines. And I wouldn't say that Bitcoin miners are competing against these transmission projects, because Bitcoin mining is a very competitive industry. And in areas with a lot of energy demand, for example, let's say Europe, energy prices are so high that miners can't compete with the local demand there. So you need, so if, let's say in Norway, we have stranded energy in Northern Norway, even if we had a lot, we have a lot of mining in Northern Norway, but they would still build transmission lines because the energy market in the south part of Norway and Europe has a much higher willingness to pay for this energy than Bitcoin miners. So they would outcompete Bitcoin miners on the price they're willing to pay. So, I think in areas with a lot of stranded energy, you will have a transmission line development sooner or later. But in the meantime, you can always monetize this energy by mining Bitcoin, and it's better than wasting energy. I think everyone should agree with that, even if you believe Bitcoin is a waste, which some people believe. And when it comes to batteries, Bitcoin is not a competitor to batteries either, because batteries store energy while Bitcoin miners don't store energy. So they don't really compete at all. And Bitcoin mining can actually be combined with batteries. We see some projects, for example, I believe Square is trying to build a combined battery, Bitcoin mining, and solar project. Because batteries have limited capacity, storage capacity. So what are you going to do when the battery is full and you still have a lot of energy generated by your wind or solar plant? Then you might as well just let this energy flow into the Bitcoin mining operation. And when it comes to the capital directed to Bitcoin mining is competing against the development of batteries, I don't think it's a good argument at all. It's like, it's like saying that, it's a stupid argument. I don't buy that argument. Of course, all capital competes against other capital.
Yeah. No, that's a perfect way of leading it right there, right? We don't necessarily need to debunk every stupid argument that pops up. Let's move over to the three operating models of Bitcoin mining with renewables. I found this to be a really fascinating part of your research. And for anyone who's following along, I think it's page 47. So we have a few different models. We have grid connected, behind the meter, and behind the meter, high uptime, and behind the meter, low uptime. We also find in this, and I always want to highlight this so we get into the conversation, that there's different uptime percentages that are best for Bitcoin miners who are using renewable energy, based on the fact that renewable energy has very volatile price hikes and price spikes. and sometimes it's really cheap. So let's go through those three models. And then I'd like to get a little note in on like the different percentage uptimes, as I think that's a counterintuitive way of thinking about mining to most people.
Okay. Yeah. So most people believe that a Bitcoin mining operation needs to be running 100% of the time, but it's totally false. A Bitcoin miner can actually make much more profit if they exploit the interruptibility of their operation and reduces the uptime from, let's say, 100% to 98% or 95%. And the reason is that in many electricity markets, particularly those with a high share of wind and solar, due to the volatility of the power prices, you have a skewed price distribution. So most of the time you have very low prices. Like this is happening in Texas. Most of the time, very low prices, and a few percent of the hours of the year, you have extremely high prices. And most energy consumers, they have to use electricity during this whole price distribution, even in the very expensive hours. Bitcoin miners can very easily turn off their machines, so they can simply not consume energy during the highest priced hours of the year. And this is how Bitcoin miners, like for example Riot in Texas, achieves such low power prices. Riot achieves much lower power prices than most other grid connected customers in Texas because they're able to reduce their uptime just a little bit. And this little bit reduction of uptime can reduce their power prices by 20, 30, 40%. So this model, which Riot is doing, is if you look at the three operating models, is grid connected with high uptime. So this is around 98% uptime. They are buying energy in the spot market and selling ancillary services to the grid, which is demand response services. So we saw Riot this summer. They participated in the 4CP program, which they need to reduce their electricity consumption during a few hours of the most, like when the energy is very scarce during the summer. And by doing this, they receive energy credits, which reduces their average price of energy during the following year. This is strengthening the electricity grid. And in this setup, you need to the most economical way to do it is to use efficient, energy efficient models. And that's what Riot and most other publicly listed miners do. And then you have a model in the middle here, which has around 95% uptime, maybe up to 98%. This is behind the meter, with high uptime. Behind the meter means that you're co-located with a renewable energy generator, and this renewable energy generator can choose between selling the energy to the Bitcoin mining facility or selling the energy to the grid. But in this case, you can also use the energy from the grid. And in this case, you should create the Bitcoin mining facility. It has a smaller load than the renewable energy generator because of the low capacity factor of renewables. You can also choose to have behind the meter with the lower uptime. The uptime in this setup will vary considerably. But in this case, you are using older machines, which are very cheap, very low capex. And generally, the cheaper machines you use, the lower uptime you can handle, and the more renewable energy you can use because of the low capacity factor of renewables. So if you are connected behind the meter, you can't expect 100% uptime. Because one, the low renewable energy has low capacity factor, and two, it's not economical. because as I mentioned, energy price distribution is skewed. So you want to avoid the few hours with really expensive energy.
Yeah, I love how you put that. And the one thing I would add just for clarity as well is like there's a lot of benefits for every miner who's hooked up to this sort of grid system where there is demand response and where you are selling back to the grid. The overall cost of your energy goes down. So even if you're not getting like credits often, you are getting a lower rate in the first place just because the company itself is responding to demand on the grid and lowering down or turning off when demand is high. Unless we have anything else to add there, I think we should turn to the last part of the research report, which is talking about some of the externalities, the positive externalities of Bitcoin mining, particularly like the heat offload that's created from Bitcoin mining, and then also the consumption of flared gas. So let's spend a few minutes on both those topics. Flared gas and Bitcoin mining is probably the place to start since we're still talking about energy sources. We've had this conversation a lot on the podcast. As you know, I've had a lot of flared gas miners on the podcast. What was your takeaway from doing a deep dive into the research zone, you know, looking at all the gas flare operations out there? What did you think about them currently? What do you think like the runway is for these flared gas miners? And last question, if I can throw three at you at the same time, is how do you think public perception of these flared gas miners is at the moment? Is the energy industry actually taking this seriously, or do they think it's just sort of a nice pet project?
I think mitigating natural gas flaring with Bitcoin mining is probably the most promising, I would say, way of utilizing Bitcoin mining as an energy tool, because it shows really how much synergies Bitcoin mining has with the energy industry. The energy industry, the oil producers can both increase their revenues by doing this because they don't have to just waste this gas. They can actually sell the gas and they can reduce emissions, which is increasingly important for these companies. And I believe that the oil producers are really taking this seriously. We saw, for example, even a Norwegian energy producer, which is like Equinor, which is really into ESG and everything like that. They did this. And what I think is so cool is that actually ESG is pushing this these energy producers into Bitcoin mining. While you would think that ESG was preventing energy producers from mining Bitcoin, but it's actually it's actually the opposite. So just because of the extreme emission reduction, you see that those people who actually, those environmentalists who actually care about reducing emissions, because not everyone really care about that, they actually are really easy to like when I talk to them about this, they really easily understand this. Like for example, Daniel Batten, he's an environmentalist. He loves this idea of Bitcoin mining mitigating emissions by preventing gas flaring. And we see a massive growth of this during the last 2 years, and the growth is really accelerating with, for example, Crusoe Energy pushing into the Middle East. And who knows how much energy companies are really doing this in Russia, for example. And the amount of natural gas flared globally each year is enough to power the entire continent of sub-Saharan Africa. So there's so much energy out there in natural gas flaring. And I really believe that this is going to become a really significant part of the Bitcoin mining network in a few years. Right now, I heard estimates around between 2% and 5%. So it's not really big yet. But I think we're going to see massive growth in this simply because it's so synergistically between the energy companies and the Bitcoin mining companies here.
No, definitely. I've loved talking with everyone in the flared gas industry for Bitcoin mining. They're always interesting people who have like connected the dots between two industries in a different way. I would even estimate that it's probably lower than that, like probably less than 1% is some of the conversations I've had. It's very small, like 2% is also very small. So there's a lot of growth there. And I think the graphics that you put together in this research report, especially the maps showing the flared spots all around the world, shows you how much promise there is in this part of Bitcoin mining's energy future. Let's turn over to the heat portion of this. You have some great information about how the external heat, or the heat that Bitcoin miners put off, can be used as a positive externality. We have a few examples, like Mint Green, I think, is powering portions of Vancouver using excess heat from Bitcoin miners. We've all seen the photos of like greenhouses, there's, you know, potato cellars, things like that being warmed by Bitcoin miners. How much of a conversation topic is this for people in the energy space? Is it, again, sort of just like a side conversation that people are like, oh, this is a nice positive externality, but it's not going to lead to much? Or do you think this is an underrated factor when it comes to discussing Bitcoin's energy future?
I can tell you that in Norway, all miners are either developing solutions for this right now or talking about it. And I think also it's a very underrated topic. I think it's one of the most promising ways Bitcoin miners can help solve energy problems, because heat is a very big user of energy. It's the almost accounts for almost half of the global energy consumption. So by repurposing the heat from Bitcoin mining, which is heat that otherwise would just be wasted, you essentially have free heat. Most Bitcoin miners operate in places where heat is not that valuable. So they, like, I can imagine in Texas, no one talks about this. But in northern Norway, northern Sweden, I talked to some miners in Finland who were reusing their excess heat. You know, it's really cold in Finland, even colder than in Norway. So, and you can use it for all kinds of purposes. You can use it for district heating systems like Mint Green does in Canada. In Norway, we don't have that much district heating systems, but you can still use it for food production, like these massive greenhouses. You can use it for salmon farming. I know a few salmon farms in northern Norway that probably could be interested in this after a while. And there's a miner in Norway, which is called BitZero in northern Norway. They're currently developing a massive greenhouse in northern Norway, which will reuse heat from their Bitcoin mining operation. And this heat and this greenhouse, such a large greenhouse, would not be possible to construct without the free heating from the Bitcoin mining operation. Because in northern Norway, northern Sweden, northern Russia, northern Canada, the whole northern part of the world, there are almost no greenhouses, big greenhouses. And the reason is because it's so cold there. So it's very, very expensive to heat these greenhouses. But Bitcoin mining actually makes it possible to build very big greenhouses there. And this can increase the food security in the region, which I believe is very important. And you don't even need such a big Bitcoin mining load to build a big greenhouse. That's what's also really interesting about this.
Yeah. No, the whole thing, you sound very bullish on it, more so than I was expecting. It makes sense too, right? You better the economics of the whole system. If you can just plug in a few ASICs on a decent power cost, then you're lowering the total cost of your operation. So like your greenhouse has a complement revenue stream to it. We've seen a few Bitcoin miners for Compass and other Bitcoin miners I've talked to in the space are doing this. Like, they're not really interested in the Bitcoin mining portion as much as getting the economics of their other project into like the parameters they want. They want their revenues to make sense. And so they create two revenue streams and they add a positive externality, like the heat from Bitcoin mining, and maybe even better their own operation. The coolest one I really want to look into and perhaps have them on the podcast is these Idaho potato farmers who are using Bitcoin mining to warm their cellars during the cold winter months, and they're able to keep their potato operation running year round. It's not the most sexy part of any sort of Bitcoin operation, but it's definitely one of the most interesting side parts that I think has popped up over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is also interesting is that this can increase the decentralization of the Bitcoin mining network, because where electricity is expensive, heat is usually also expensive. So that can reusing the excess heat can make it possible to construct a Bitcoin mining facility in places where it is very expensive for electricity, for example, in Central Europe, and you sell the heat, and you have two income streams from Bitcoin mining and from selling the heat that can offset the expensive electricity prices you pay. And of course, this is a much more complicated way to mine Bitcoin than just plugging it in and drawing electricity from the grid. But I believe that in the long term, to survive as a Bitcoin miner, you have to solve at least one energy problem, because solving an energy problem will help you lower your electricity cost. That can be mitigating natural gas flaring, repurposing the excess heat, using stranded energy resources that otherwise would be wasted, or providing these demand response services. So the time for just being a passive Bitcoin mining energy consumer, which has no real energy strategy, is over with this bear market. I think now all miners will be forced to at least participate more actively in the energy markets.
That's a really interesting thought. A nice compliment to what we're talking about right now. And it makes sense, right? You need to be solving multiple things. And in doing that, you create like more positive externalities for the energy grid or for whatever other markets that Bitcoin miners jump into. Okay, so we have about 3-4 minutes left here. I want to get two more questions to you. First one is, what do you think about the impact of reports like this and how they move into the right people's hands? So as these journalists, not really doing a lot of research, might just throw out a headline about Bitcoin mining sucking up all the world's energy. How do you think these research reports are taken? And what do you think Bitcoin miners out there can do to better the understanding of both these markets, the economics of Bitcoin mining, and the positive externalities?
So this energy FUD debate, it's, as I guess you also think, is really irritating debate, but we have to fight it. There's mainly two groups you need to convince. You don't need to convince the trolls, because they will not be convinced and they only want to irritate us. So you need to convince two groups. First, it's just normal people who don't really know that much about energy. We're not experts on energy or not experts on Bitcoin. Those people can only be convinced by explaining them the value of Bitcoin, making them understand why Bitcoin is worth spending energy on. So you need to focus on the positive sides of Bitcoin, not the energy consumption here. The second group to convince is the energy industry, energy professionals. And to convince them, you don't need to convince them of the value of Bitcoin as a payment system. You only need to convince them of the value of Bitcoin as an energy tool. How can it help the energy industry? How can it solve energy problems? And this group is what we focused on in this report. And I also think it's most interesting to focus on this group to educate the energy industry, because I believe educating them is the best way to win this energy FUD debate, because the energy industry is the world's largest industry. And it's a very powerful industry. So getting them behind Bitcoin is really, if we get them behind Bitcoin, the energy FUD debate is basically over. So I believe the energy industry will be very important supporters of Bitcoin as Bitcoin becomes a bigger and more important part of society.
There we go. Okay, last question for you. You've probably heard this one a few times. What is your prediction for network hash rate by the end of the year? So you have about 5 months left or so. And luckily, like, you have the hindsight, or you have all the benefits of hindsight that a lot of other people did not have. Curious to get your take. Are you super bullish, breaking past 250, staying below it? Where are we at?
I guess 240.
240. Okay. Noted bull. There we go. I'm still like 249. Price or right rules. So anything below I get. But I don't think I've seen anyone over 275 since about May. Most people have been pretty scared. At the beginning of the year, I think I had one person say 350 exahash. So that was, wow. That was pretty impressive. We're not anywhere.
Yeah, we'll see if the public miners are able to plug in all their incoming hash rate. Then it might increase.
There's definitely a lot of
ASICs on the Bitcoin price.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with that. A lot of hash rate sitting on shelves waiting to be plugged in, and a lot of new machines being deployed, like S19 XPs are finally being deployed, which is probably going to add a decent amount of hash rate with the extra benefits of the efficiency and power output. So we'll see where we get by the end of the year, but great to get that. Also great to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining. For anyone who wants to look at this report or look at your information, where can they find you?
So you can find this report on arcane.no. It's arcane with a C. And you can find me on Twitter, J Mellerud, with two L's there on Twitter. And be aware of the impersonators.
They're out there and there are many. You got good content. Everyone's trying to copy you. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.